I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a hike up the mountains, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Sally Hansen. Sally Hansen herself was more than a beauty innovator and businesswoman. She believed in the importance of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Sally Hansen believes that beauty is better when you do it yourself. So this summer, why not get a salon finish on your nails with Miracle Gel and a perfect flawless tan with the iconic airbrush Lex Tan? And just like Sally herself, enjoy every self-caring moment of it. This week on the Good Glow podcast, my friend Rebecca Horn. She speaks to me about her ectopic pregnancy and multiple miscarriages. Rebecca made the decision to speak about what she's been through over the last year. A lot of my listeners have asked me to cover this topic as it affects so many of us. So I'm so grateful to Rebecca for sharing her story on my podcast today. We first met in our 20s at such an exciting time in our lives. We were both engaged, worked really hard, but spent a lot of the time laughing. She has such a brilliant personality, and I think that's what makes this podcast so special. She is still the same Bex I've always known. We laughed and cried while recording this episode together. It was so tough for her, but I'm in complete awe of her strength and how she's able to articulate what she's been through over the past year. Rebecca, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Hello, how are you? I'm good. So nervous.
I know you are, and you've been on such a journey over the last year, and we've been in touch with each other. I suppose we've both been through the mill over the last while. But let's start with how we first met. Yeah. Back in the Communicore days, yes. I think you were working, you started in 98FM, didn't you?
I was started in 98FM under the wing of Tina and Brendan, and then moved to all of the rest of them and was literally working for all of them. But yeah, 98. And where you were kind of with Spin as well.
Yeah. So I was kind of working across 98 and Spin. And I remember when you came in, you were just this complete breath of fresh air. So stylish, full of positivity. And I remember, I think you had just gotten engaged at the time to Jason, who's from South Africa. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about him.
He's amazing. Thank God I met Jason, because he is for sure a steadier for me in my life. He's definitely a rock. And I do get emotional talking about him, because maybe I feel every day I'm not grateful enough. But he's a rock. I met him years ago and I just found him so funny. He was the most directly honest person. He wasn't like an Irish guy who's like, I might bring you for a date or I might text you. He just would text and he just would bring you for a date, and he'd follow through on everything. And he was super kind, and there was never any angles. I was always looking for some kind of side to him. Always, because I was so suspicious of men. I'd had all these terrible relationships. And he just doesn't have that. He just is what he is. But with that means that he's very direct when he says something, because South Africans are very direct. I do not like that outfit. But yeah, I got engaged and then was in the whirlwind of Communicore and got married, I think, on a day that I was working. I think you laughed about this, because I was in City Hall and I'd packed my dress, but I was training in newsreading and I kind of slipped up. And then we had a lunch afterwards, and then I got married away in Mallorca, which was very special. But yeah, he's just great.
And was he always going to live here forever, or
no,
was it because of
God
you that he
him.
Stayed here?
No, I don't think so. He was here. He'd kind of followed a path. He had his name is McNeilis, so he'd followed a path to come back to Ireland to get a passport, because South Africa is so volatile. So he's third generation. So he thought maybe if he works in London or Ireland for a while, he can perhaps get some citizenship for Europe. And he was here working and playing cricket and doing very well in that, and he had bought a little house, and he kind of was doing that. And I think he was thinking, there's a boom, I'll then sell and go back and live this other life. No, for sure. I think, you know, he still desperately misses South Africa, even with all the bad things that go on there. He misses it a lot, but we've made a life for now here, so
Yeah. And then little Gia came along in November 2017. So she's 6 months younger than Pia. And I suppose for both of us, we were on the same path. Jamie's 5 years older than me. Yeah. Jason's 5 years older than you. We kind of got married around the same time. We had our babies around the same time. And I remember, you know, when I was in my maternity leave, I was hearing from you. And we always just kind of kept in touch. But then I suppose life took a turn for me. First, maybe I got breast cancer then so soon after having Pia, and I felt so supported by all my work colleagues, and I felt like everyone kind of came on the journey with me because I changed so much. Mm-hmm. And you do through struggle, mm-hmm. you change and you get to know yourself better. But I always felt so supported by you guys, and it meant so much to me.
Well, you talk about describing me. I always felt like I was this whirlwind of madness. I was always very hyper. I was always trying to fit in too much. And I always felt like I was over the top. And I remember someone saying at CommuniCore, people would like you more if you just weren't so crazy. And I remember thinking, what an awful thing to say to someone, because I was always like that. And I'm a bit of a pleaser and I just try and get on with it. And I'm probably a little bit nerdy. And so it's so sweet that you're like, oh, no, you're really positive, because I never knew really what people thought, because there was a lot of cliques and friendships in CommuniCore that had been established when I came in. But you were just so beautiful and relaxed and like competent at everything. Like, you'd be like, I'll just edit that really quickly and pop in the showbiz report, and had a ton of friends and never said anything bad about anyone. There was no kind of like bitchiness to you. There was no media side to you. And I just thought, God, she's just fantastic. Like, I know she'll go far. Who knew it would be in such this realm? Like, mm-hmm. but I just knew you'd go far. And I did remember seeing your news and being absolutely stunned, because I think we always think bad things won't happen to good people. It's not going to happen to someone like her. You know, she's got the world at her feet. So I was shocked. I contacted you. I was heartbroken. I think I spoke to Michelle and Karen afterwards. They were like, yeah, because I was like, this can't be true. This can't be happening. So I was heartbroken for you. But I watched you mother away with Pia, and I was there in the background trying to do the same with Gia, like following the little path. So, yeah.
How did you find motherhood to start with? Like, those first 6 months are just so insane, aren't they?
It's the best thing I've ever done. Like, absolutely the best thing I've ever done. And I'll never not say that out loud. And some, you know, some people go, yeah, it's the best thing, but I've all of this, this and this. I can't compare it to anything, because she came along and she changed my life completely. I think I was a martyr through my pregnancy and birth, because I think I felt I'd put it off for a few years. So I'm going to do this perfectly. It's going to be the most perfect time. So I was very controlling about it all. Like, I had to have a natural labor with no epidural. This was something I felt that I had to do. So I put a lot of pressure on myself. I wanted exclusively breastfeed, no bottles touching her lips for 12 months. By the way, this was not an external factor. No one was saying anything to me. I just wanted to do it this way. And I wanted to be in a bubble with her. And because of that, I think I struggled a bit come the 4 to 5 month mark. I think initially I really enjoyed it, and then I really struggled. I felt I was really like in prison in the home, because I couldn't pump, because I wouldn't pump. And I'll never forget my cousin Jane coming up from Cork. She's a vet, and she's very like pom pom pom, and she was like, just open your top there and we'll stick a pump on. And I was like, don't be, what? I'm not going to. And she said, yes, you are. You're going to pump some milk today, and you're going to get out of this house for 2 hours away from your child. And I think that was the day I went in to speak to Lauren in Spain about Me Too movement or something. And it was the first day I'd left her. I mean, that's crazy. And then I have a lot of struggles because I went back to work quickly. I went back just under 6 months. And I have a lot of guilt about that and huge regrets about that.
Why did you go back so soon? Was it just pressure on yourself?
Lots of reasons. I felt that I would lose out. I felt like I would lose my pace. Like, I am very career driven, but I also felt like I had to do it quickly or I would lose my slot. Mm-hmm. Financially, I thought it, like, even though now Jason's like, we can be broken. Like, you don't need to. So financially, I thought I should, even though we weren't struggling or anything. Lots of reasons. And I thought, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget dropping her and sobbing for 2-3 days walking into work. I don't believe in regrets in life, but I do regret that time, that precious time that I know that this tiny baby was being held by other women in a room, you know.
It's so interesting what you say there about missing your slot. And I think especially in media, you just feel like you could just be replaced and no one will give a second thought about
you. You know how that felt, like 100%.
Definitely when I was diagnosed with cancer, when Pia was 7 months old, I remember I rang Hannah and Dieran, who were my great pals at the time, because I sat beside them and we were very like connected. And I remember saying, like, I'll be back in January, like, you know, 3 months. Yeah. You know, I just have I just have a small bit of cancer in my breast. I'll be back in 3 months. And I remember I went into my doctor and he's like, no, this is a year at least out of your life. And I remember just being so shocked because I was like, I can't be gone from my job for like a maternity leave and a year of sickness on top of it. But I think you got to just sometimes just surrender to life.
And I don't know whether we're similar in that way, that I'm very controlled about when things get out of my path. I can't, like, if someone, like, you're being told there, you are going to be out of work for a year and maybe sick. That was not in your path. And I find when something takes me, some people are very chill about the grey area. If you take me off my path and tell me something like that, it really throws me. And I probably did feel, I think you are very replaceable in media, but what I will tell any young women out there who are listening to this, there's always a spot back. There's always a slot back. There's always another job. And I think the fear is very dangerous in media, whether it's media or anything else you get into, be it medicine or, oh, I don't know, art or whatever. There's always a slot for you in life and a way for you to make it. And I think it's really awful and toxic that we feel that because we're having a child, which, by the way, only at the we can do, we're going to lose out somehow. And I think that's very distressing. And I do think that was a massive rhetoric in my head, narrative in my head, that I will lose everything I've worked really hard for if I step away and mind my child. That's crazy to me now.
Yeah.
And you always find your way. If you're talented enough, if you work hard enough, Georgie, you'll always get that job back. But there is a little bit of a feeling out there that if you do that, you'll never get another job. You'll never work another day in this city.
It's insane. I remember when I just had Pia, I remember thinking, I was so guilty of this in my life before cancer, of what's next? When's the next baby coming? Hadn't even recovered. My body was growing cancer. I didn't know. But always on to the next. I got married. What's next? Have a baby. Have my first baby. What's next? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go back to work for a year or two and then I'll have another baby. And it's only when I got sick that I appreciated actually what I had mm-hmm. was everything I needed. Mm-hmm. Did you start to think about having a second child?
No, if I'm really honest, I was very vocal, and my family laugh now about, I'll never have another baby. Like, very vocal, which is funny because I was always the person who loved children. I was a secondary, before the media bug bit, I was a secondary teacher and just loved, I feel like children, I believe the children, I firmly believe that there's so many bad adults in the world, like, harness children, like, mind them. They're incredible. I love children. Not in a creepy way, but I've always loved children. I loved babysitting. I love people's babies. Give them to me for 3 hours. I know that they'll be okay. I'm quite maternal in that sense. I like caring for people. So I always knew I was going to have a child, and it changed my life, like I said. But I think the whole postnatal, the body change, those narcissistic reasons kind of killed me for a while, and I kept saying never. So it took a good year and a half. Like, some people, I always find it gas when you hear people who are like, had a straight baby within the year. I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Did you do that?
What? No, as in, like, I was like, give me a year and a half. And then I felt really broody and ready. But I think your point about filling your life, ticking those boxes, your 5-year plan, your 6-year plan, your I'll get my abs back and then I'll do this, then I'll get this job promotion. I do think we're all very guilty of that. Mm-hmm. Not just in big cities, I think just all over the world. And I think it's, I think that is what has changed me this year. I just don't care so much about all that stuff.
Yeah. You're an amazing writer. Obviously, you work in media and you're so talented at it. And over the last while, your Instagram posts have really touched me. And just because you can articulate what it's like to be a mother or to be a woman. And I've felt your pain through your posts, but I think what you have done is so brave because people don't talk about it. And I think 10 years ago especially, it was never spoken about, and now miscarriage and pregnancy loss is becoming, I suppose, more widely discussed. And you are one of those people that are breaking down barriers. And it's, did you have to, like, because obviously you want to protect yourself and your bubble and your family. So why did you decide
and
to
protect your career? I mean, it's quite an exposed spot you leave yourself in. And I know this sounds really strange, but I have quite a senior position. I love my job a lot. I love the people I work with. You're kind of dealing with, you know, I'm in a professional capacity. You're also leaving yourself exposed to a lot of what's going on with you personally, and is that good for business? Is that good for your job? And you worry about that. Thank you for being so kind. I'm going to be honest. It felt grimy. It felt dirty. It felt, was I being attention seeking? It felt like, are people going to think, what is she, like, she puts up fashion rubbish. Like, I don't have some huge following. I'm not an influencer in any way, shape or form. I'm just a girl who has worked in media for quite some time. If you think about it, since I was an RTÉ at 17. So I've kind of been around. But I'm certainly not someone people would necessarily know of, except maybe through radio. And I would always put up like an outfit of the day or behind the scenes of our filming for work, or I'd put up family. I'm very about family. Now, less so Gia in pictures now, straight on. I'm kind of stopping doing that. But I was never really talking about the grimy realities. Mm-hmm. Never really. Which I've kind of gone, why? What is, like, what was so embarrassing about that? And I tell you what happened. I started feeling like what I was doing wasn't real. And it was a little bit like, what's the point in being on social media? So I was a bit like, should I just come off Instagram if it's kind of just fake? And I don't mean fake, like I'm putting up, like everything I'm saying is a lie, but it's not really what was happening throughout my day. It was just a tiny snippet of it. And that's not what was going on. And I just kind of was watching other women be really honest and talk about their truth and talk about, and like, I felt like it was different for you guys because you had a great platform. People trusted what you said and you were admired. And I felt like a bit silly doing it. But I kind of, in January, when I'd had my first proper kind of miscarriage, I was going to yoga in Yoga Dublin, which is a really good healer for me a lot. And I kept writing under my post, hashtag healing. But I wasn't alluding to why I was healing. And I hadn't said I'd had a miscarriage because I felt like, oh, that's kind of like, that's kind of private, you know. But people were like, okay, what's going on? Is she having a breakdown? Is she... And then when I had what happened in February, I remember sitting in the hospital, Georgie, and being like, F it. Like, what have I got to put up on social media at the moment? If I know I'm going to be inactive for 6 weeks, if I know I'm going to be going through this hell on my own, what is the point? So should I shut down the account because I'm going to be missing for 6 weeks? Or do I share the fact that this happens? You may not know what's happening to your body and it could kill you. So I was like, I'm going to put it up. And I remember Jason being a bit like, gosh, Bex, you know, he's extremely private. Like, he is not on social media. And he was like, that's kind of opening up your heart. And I'm like, but so what? But you know when you post something, Georgie, and you actually put your phone away?
Yeah, you go and hide moment, in the press.
Oh my God. You're like, this is so, this is very open. And I did kind of throw my phone over there and I couldn't believe. This just shows how I kind of find everyone maybe just be... Maybe people aren't as genuine as I think they are. The amount of outpouring of support and love and good grace and goodwill. There wasn't one person going, oh, that's interesting. There was not some snotty snide. Everyone was so lovely. And that kind of showed me like that we need a little bit more of honesty and truth.
And what was happening then in February when you were writing that post?
So basically... we're talking about pregnancy loss. I'd had very early, I think they kind of call them chemical pregnancies last summer, where you were, like you were saying, people didn't talk about these things, but women didn't really know about these things back in the day because these bloody awful pregnancy tests, and I really just hate them, weren't available. So if you were trying to conceive, you waited maybe till 9-10 weeks till you'd missed a period, till you felt pregnant, till you had the signs, you went to your doctor. Nowadays, it's like ovulation day. Everyone's tracking everything. Everyone's worrying and waiting, and they call it the 2-week wait. And there's this kind of obsession pit. So I didn't know, I wasn't trying to conceive last summer, but I'd obviously fallen pregnant, and it was my husband's 40th party. And I just remember leaving it, having a massive bleed. I was in the sparkly white Rixo dress and being like, oh God. And he was like, why are you going so early? I was like, Gia's having a breakdown. I gotta go. So that was that. And I still wasn't really interested in having another baby. Sorry, at this point. I'd gotten a promotion in work. I was very happy in my job. And in October, the Rugby World Cup was on and I got this once in a lifetime chance with Radio Nova, separate to my job. And I was, thankfully, my work was so understanding about me going to broadcast over there at the quarterfinals with them. So they were doing the breakfast show. So it was with Colm Hayes and Clint, and they're amazing people. And they were like, can you come for a week? And I was like, oh my God, yes. So it was a big decision. It was the longest I'd been away from Gia. She was turning 2. I'd never been away from her overnight, ever. I'm that mom. So it was going to be like 7-8 days. So I went, and I do remember the course of that week saying to Colm and Clint, I'd love a second baby, and having these really private conversations with them and not my husband. And I kind of feel like it would complete, and that, like, talking to them a lot about it. And they're like, go for it. What are you waiting for? Like, life doesn't... So I came back and it was November and I spoke to Jason and he was like, yes, like, let's try. Let's just not make it a pressured thing. Let's try. So let's, you know. And then, like, felt really awful one day cycling to work, nearly fainted, falling, like, was nearly off my bike, had to put my bike somewhere, didn't even tie it up in Ranelagh, went straight into the GP in Ranelagh, and she just did, like, this pinprick oxygen test thing, and she's like, oh, you viral pneumonia. I was like, what? The only thing I ever have wrong with me is, like, cramps in my stomach from drinking too much or, like, gluten intolerant. I was like, what? And I remember just being like, this is insane. And it was such a wake-up call because it was like you were doing too much. You were overburdening your body. You were very stressed.
And had you had a miscarriage then at the 40th birthday party?
So after that, I'd had a chemical pregnancy or an early miscarriage. It's called an early miscarriage. So it would have been before maybe 6 weeks.
Okay. So you knew this and
I
you
knew
had
that.
Moved on and now
yeah,
it was...
totally moved on. Like, Georgie, like, put it here.
Yeah.
And Jason's folks were over from South Africa, so we didn't discuss it. And when they left, we discussed it. I think it was hurting me a lot more than I thought it was hurting me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, fast track November. I'm told to go to bed for 2 weeks. Go to bed. I was like, I'm really busy. Blah, blah, blah. They're like, you have to go to bed and turn off your emails. You have to rest and take this medicine. So to go on this kind of serious antibiotic. What do I decide during that time? Oh, we should try to conceive. We should try to get pregnant because I'm off. And... perfect time. I'm so healthy. My body is amazingly healthy. I'm a marathon runner. I mean, Jason's just like, she's crazy. But we fell pregnant really quickly. Okay, so really quickly. And that was November, December, Christmas. The excitement was insane. It was like, I got that. And I was trying to avoid people, particularly family and people I kind of knew might have been pregnant too and close friends, because I didn't want to release it too early. I wanted to keep it like, because I was worried. I don't know why, but I was. And Christmas at home, fabulous. First nasty week back at work. We all know what that's like in January. It's always raining. No one has money. It's Miz. And it's the worst. Like, it is the worst. Whether you're a depressed person or not, it's the worst. And you're like trying to buy like flowery dresses on ASOS and book holidays to Marbella, but you're like, this is not going to help. And I remember, don't know why, I was like, I'll just do another pregnancy test. Even though I'd confirmed the pregnancy, I should have been going to my first scan. And I went and got one and sat in this toilet in a cafe near work. And it went immediately, the line went faint and then went, oh, that's kind of weird. And then I did like obsessively two more that evening. This is where I talk about these pregnancy tests, how dangerous they are for the head. And it seemed to be going. Now, that day I decided to tell my mum because she was away with my sister in Spain and I wanted to tell her. And maybe I wanted to tell her because I knew things might get a bit funky. But I said, oh, you know, nearly 8 weeks pregnant, going for a scan next week, very excited. And she was like, imagine it's a boy and we're having really nice banter. But I think in the back of my head, something was wrong. So bam, the next day, massive cramps, felt rubbish. Went to Jason in the kitchen. I said, can you bring me to the GP? And he's like, we've got to bring Gia to creche. I was like, well, we can bring Gia to the on the way, you know. And he brought me and I went in and they were very busy. And it wasn't that she was heartless or anything, but she wasn't my GP. It was another lady. And she just said, I've tested now a few times, Rebecca. I felt your stomach. You're losing this pregnancy. And I just remember being completely blown away by those words. I was like, well, what can I do to retain it? Or what? And I remember just being like, how do I fix this? And she's like, well, no, what's going to happen is you're going to have a big bleed. It's going to go on for a number of days. It might be painful. You can go and get a D&C, but it might be too early at this stage. But your Reese is negative. So she kind of said all this stuff because my blood is Reese is negative. She's like, you might need to do this and this and that. But I remember just walking out. I didn't want to hear it. Left, got into the car and crawled onto the seat of the car and bawled. Now, Gia's in the car with us and we try never to kind of have too many emotional outbursts in front of her, but I couldn't help it. I was like, why? You know, what is going on? What have I done? And Jason was like, oh my goodness, I didn't, you know, I think men sometimes think that you don't care that much about, I don't know, maybe we don't show it, but I was devastated.
Because I think the first time you can go, you can, like you said, you just parked it, oh, don't deal with this.
Yeah.
This is just a weird thing that happened and it won't happen again.
Yeah.
And then when it's happening the second time, you're like...
It's kind of cruel. I felt a bit like, come on, lads, I've had pneumonia and I'm a health... What is wrong with me? I'm eating too many refresher sweets. Like, you start to just go...
You're trying to find a way to blame yourself.
I'm too old. Those eggs are dead. I am old. Like, I'm in my mid-30s. I'm not really old. I do think we do that too. And I bawled and I was very, very sad. I was very sad. And I didn't attend Holles Street, which, sorry, I would encourage any woman, particularly if they're over 6 weeks. And I'm, P.S., I am not belittling early pregnancy loss because I think it's gut-wrenching no matter when. You know when people go, how many weeks were you? And you're like, It doesn't matter. And I firmly believe that. But I certainly think at a point you should attend hospital, because if you have a certain blood type, it can be dangerous to be bleeding that much. But also you might want to see if you need a DNC, which is a kind of a clearing out, mm-hmm. not the nicest of terms. So what happened was I did what Rebecca does. I ignored it completely. I certainly didn't speak to that many people. I told, obviously, my family, and they were very, very supportive. I didn't really, I don't know whether I told many of my friends. No, I don't think I did.
And what does your mum say to you? Like, obviously, your mum is heartbroken.
Well, mum's from a generation where the sharing on social media is, they're probably allergic. Like, my mum is, you know, by the way, my mum is my best friend.
Yeah.
She's the world to me. Mm-hmm. And might have suffered in different ways. Now, I don't think she had these experiences when she was younger, but certainly hasn't had an easy road of it. But I think she was very, very sad for me. But I think she was very like, you need to go to Hollis Street and mind yourself. She was very much like, mind yourself. You had pneumonia, now this, like, Bex, I'm a bit concerned. But I was mm-hmm. straight back at it. Work is always a great distraction. I don't know whether you find that sometimes, just throwing yourself at that can help. But I was drained. I was quite tired. And I was very low, but I was hiding it very well. So straight back into work. I confided with a few people in work who were wonderful. There was never any pressure, by the way, to be working like a dog or like get back on it at all. But I felt very much like leaders, female leaders in the world, probably bleed in meetings and stand up on podiums and bleed through this, because that's what you do when you're a female. Like, what crap was I feeding myself? Like, I was honestly in this whole thing, like, it's weakness. Weakness kept going through my head. So I've already had 2 weeks off, and I'm not taking time off work. So that happened. And then this bizarre, we were not trying to get pregnant. So I don't know whether I'm just like the most fertile cow in the field, but we were not. But we are in a marriage, and we'd obviously had sex a few times or whatever had happened. And this bizarre thing, so that was very early January. This bizarre thing started happening early Feb, where I kept bleeding on and off. Okay, so just spotting, like nothing dramatic, but bleeding on and off. And I kept going, because Georgie, I'm not really a mad doctor person, even though it seems like I've been a lot recently, like with those two. Mm-hmm. I just kept saying, it's from that miscarriage, it's a follow on, my cycle is a disaster zone. But I'm bleeding on and off, feeling nauseous all the time, like really nauseous. Like I just want to get sick in the bin and work or... And very much not myself. And Jason kept saying, you're stressed, you need to take time off, you need to go away, you need to this and that. And I was like, nah. And one morning before work, I did one of these. I obsessively bought boxes. P.S. They will just break you if you're trying to pay for a mortgage, because they're so expensive. Clear Blue pregnancy test, like 30 quid for like 2 boxes. So I had these leftover boxes, and I decided, well, I do one in case, I mean, I couldn't be, but what if I'm still, what if my HCG levels, which are the hormone, the pregnancy hormone in your body, are still there? I had all this mad stuff in my head, and I did one, and it immediately came up positive. Immediately I was like, I can't be pregnant, I've had a minute, like I can't be, and I couldn't fathom. So I went into work and I rang my doctor, and this was my doctor, who I adore and has been extremely good to me through all of this. And I said, I wonder, can I come in after work today at about 4 o'clock, because I was on an earlier shift, and just get a blood, like, can I do urgent blood? And she goes, yeah, we can do that for you. And I was like, yeah, just something's, and she's like, yeah, yeah, grand. I didn't tell her what. And I went into work, and I worked, and we were recording some stuff, and I was busy, and I literally felt like keeling over. That's how crap I felt. I felt like I was going, I've never felt like this. Forget the pneumonia, forget anything. I felt like I couldn't listen to people's conversations. I was zoning in and out. I felt like fainting. I felt so sick, and I was bleeding quite a lot. I just felt like, what is wrong with me? So I went up to her. She did these urgent bloods with the nurse downstairs. She said, we won't get them back till 7 tomorrow morning. I was like, that's grand. She's like, but what we'll do is, don't go to work tomorrow morning. Go straight to Hollis Street when I phone you. So like, as in, just plan not to be in work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, drama. Like, I'll be grand. She's like, Rebecca, either way, you'll have to go in, because it could be something gynecological. So 7 the next morning, I'm bouncing off the walls with excitement. I don't know why, but I was like, we are having a baby. Like, I'm just thinking she's gonna, you know. And Jason's like, probably looking to leave me. Probably looking up brides online or something. I'd say he was like, this woman is demented. And I was in fabulous form, best form I'd been in a while. That just shows you, like. And she rang and she goes, we can confirm your pregnancy through the bloods, which, you know, means that you're kind of pretty much, because bloods are really certain, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, your HCG levels are extremely high. And I go, oh my God, even better. And she goes, that's not great, because at this, if you look at the fact that you would have had sex and ovulated, and you'd be very early to have HCG levels going skyrocketing. And I was like, okay, what are you trying to say? She's like, well, it could be something, but I don't want to say what it could be, or it could be twins. So I am having twins, Georgie, and I've named them. I'm having twins. I see them on the beach. I'm having twins. I didn't even hear the other part of the conversation. Meanwhile, I'm bleeding. So I'm like to Jason, probably could be twins. And I could just see he was having a break. Like, he was like, oh my God, we can't have twins. We can't. He just was not that happy about this conversation. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. So we go into Hollis Street. And he couldn't come in for it was pre-COVID. COVID was just happening. And he couldn't come into the room. I can't remember. She was just like, it's just one at a time. So she brought me in. This amazing woman. Amazing. I wished for the life of me I could remember her name, because she was so kind. She was a midwife. And she lay me on the bed, and she was to find this baby. She was trying to find it. She went everywhere with the scanner, everywhere. She was like practically in my vagina. Like, she was everywhere and couldn't source this pregnancy. And I think she was even a bit like, how do the bloods show that she's got a pregnancy? So then I felt a little bit like I was going mad and a bit of a fantasy pregnancy. Like, I actually felt a bit silly. So I was like, oh, maybe. And she goes, no, we have to source it before I send you to the consultant, because there's something wrong. And then I started to really, I think, you know, that feeling, Georgie, the dread was starting to build. And I remember I have bits of fat like anyone does. And she was like, can you just squeeze your tummy over a bit? And I did. And she was there and she goes, oh, there it is. And I was looking on the screen and I was like, okay. And she was really quiet. And she was like, so do you see where it is? She was so lovely and very smart and very knowledgeable, and nothing dramatic or emotional about her. I was emotional. Yeah, I can see. And I was kind of like, okay, so. And she goes, okay, so Rebecca, see your fallopian tubes? Yeah. And she's like, so see, it's out here. I'm like, so can we bring it back? I was like, so it can be put. And she goes, no, unfortunately, Rebecca, your pregnancy is ectopic. Had never heard of that word in my life, Georgie. Never heard it. Never knew what molar, ectopic. I didn't know these words. And I just was like, okay, what does that mean? She goes, unfortunately, it's ectopic. It can't stay in your body. It'll have to be taken out. And I'm like, but it's okay. It's got a heartbeat. Yeah, no, it's thriving, but it's thriving in a dangerous, you know, it could kill you. I'm like, how can a pregnancy, how can your baby that you've made? So immediately my mind is just like, I'm an emotional wreck. And I'm like, are there options to move it? She's like, no, Rebecca, this is not, we can't sustain this pregnancy. It's very dangerous for you. Do you understand that? And I'm like, here I go again. Like, here we go. Your body, Rebecca, is just crap. Like, so I went down a rabbit hole of, you're crap. What's wrong with you? Why can't you retain a pregnancy? Like, you're an idiot and you're silly. Why did you get pregnant? Like, I was so black. And she said, can I bring your husband in? I said, no. I was so embarrassed. I was like, I said, no, it's okay. Just give me a second. So she brought the consultant in and he was like, there's two options. You can get methotrexate, two shots today, which will dissolve the pregnancy. It's painful for a week. You'll have a lot of pain and it's not very pleasant, but it'll dissolve it. Or you can have surgery to remove it, which is what I would opt for. So what does that mean? He goes, well, we just remove it, but we have to go, it's laparoscopic. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's a bit like having probably a C-section. There's going to be a lot of healing afterwards. I said, oh, surgery for me is just not, I'm not a surgery girl. I just don't want to do that. I'd rather just do it this way. And he was like, okay, it's a very grim option. It's not very pleasant, but okay, because you'll feel it immediately. So my consultant, who's a wonderful man in Hollis Street, Dr. Declan Keane, who I had Gia with, was suddenly brought into these conversations. Now, this man didn't know about last summer. He didn't know about the January, because I didn't tell him, because I didn't communicate any of this. So he knew nothing about my previous history. I'd say he was like, there's that woman who pushed out Gia. And he was really, you know, really wonderful. And he was like, geez, Rebecca, what a road. And I was like, I know. And he was very straight. He said, I think let's always avoid surgery if we can. Let's dissolve it so that we can move on quickly, but let's maybe avoid that. And I was like, okay. And he said, but we need to move fast, so we need to do that today. So my mum came in. Jason was then told. My mum was heartbroken for me. I remember saying to this lovely lady, this midwife, you know, those really gas ones, like she was a real gas. She was like, I like your top, but it's very skimpy. Like, she was gas, and I needed her in my life that day. And I said to her, I'm going to go to Lolly and Cook's and get a coffee. And she said, she held my face. She goes, do you understand if you walk outside this building, you could die? And I remember going, drama. Like, what are you... Like, I'm fine. Like, to Jason, I was like, I'm fine. I'm bleeding a little. I'm not dying. There's people... My mum had had really bad cancer. I'm talking to someone like you, Georgie. Like, my aunt had died. I have people that are sick around me. I was like, I'm okay. And she's like, it's very serious that we get this out of you because it's multiplying, you know. So I go, I wait a few hours. I'm put in a bed and I'm brought into this room, which can only be described as the most depressing place in the world. It's like this little room. And take your pants down, lie face down on the bed, and we're going to give you one shot in one cheek and one shot in one cheek. And methotrexate is a type of chemo. It's just, they only use it in certain cases, I think, rheumatoid arthritis and other things.
Yeah.
And this, and removing pregnancies. So I lie down and I remember this is, like, I had an absolute panic attack. I just remember being like, oh my God. And my whole body was shaking and Jason was holding my hand and I was like, this is so sad. Like, is there any? And she was like, unfortunately not. She did it. And I remember then knowing that I was at the lowest, or thought I was at the lowest I could get. And I was like, get me out of this place. Like, get me out. So we got home. Mum and Jason brought me home to our house. And I remember her saying, there's going to be a lot of blood loss and it's not the most pleasant. And I walked into my house to go for pee and I'd taken my pants down and this massive amount of blood came out. And I just couldn't cope. I was like, this is so awful. This is my, like, and there was clots and stuff. And I was like, this is so sad. And I was really bad. I had to be put to bed and I was very sad. So with methotrexate, you attend Hollis Street every 2 days to make sure that it's working, you know, obviously, because it's dangerous enough. So you go back for bloods every 2 days and the HCG has to go. So day two, my wonderful sister brought me in, you know, change of person kind of dealing with me. And I think that was good. And she kind of came and sat with me and they go in and take your bloods. And then they ring you a few hours later and my bloods were going up. So the pregnancy hormone bloods were... I said, oh, is this normal? It's not. It doesn't happen often, but, you know, methotrexate works. And like, it's never, it doesn't not work. Like, it'll work. Okay. And I was feeling weird about this. Something was wrong. 2 days later, I went back in with Jason and I got a phone call again and it still wasn't going down. And I suddenly started to go, something's wrong. They're like, look, it's rare, but it can happen that it takes a while to go. It can happen. But I knew, you know, when you know, like, I know my body, I knew something was wrong. And so Thursday of that week, the 27th of February, so the 20th, I had gone in. So 7 days later, I was in my bedroom and Jason came home from work for lunch. And I collapsed and I was in the most pain, worse pain than my labour with Gia, worse pain than I've ever felt in my entire life. The cramps in my stomach were horrific. And I looked at him, I was like, we have to go into hospital now. We have to go. And he's like, are you sure? He's like, I'm 100% sure. And I have a good pain threshold, Jason. He was like, I know, okay. And he was scared. And I was like, we need to go in now. And we went in. And I was seen by my consultant and another consultant. And they told me I had to have a scan again earlier that day when I attended. And there was a heartbeat. And I'll never, ever forget it. And she did an internal and an external scan. I remember the sounds of it. I remember the whoosh, the stuff that's put on you. I remember all of that stuff. I remember the internal being very painful because obviously I was in a lot of pain. But she said, Rebecca, you know, you'll be okay. Just I'll be a few more minutes. And she kept doing it and that was fine. But I remember hearing a heartbeat. And I remember her saying, okay, this will need to be taken out to somebody. But I remember hearing that and knowing that and being absolutely devastated.
It's so cruel to hear the heartbeat.
So then Dr. Keane said, look, unfortunately it's rupturing, so we have to take your left fallopian tube out as well as the ectopic pregnancy, because that's at a point where, unfortunately, and this can happen sometimes, it's rupturing and it's hugely dangerous because internal bleeding is obviously... And sorry, I meant to say for any woman, and by the way, I'm not a medical expert, I know nothing about medicine, I'm not in medicine, but signs of ectopic, which are very interesting for rupture, are that you get really bad cramps at the top of your shoulders because it shows as internal bleeding because it goes up.
Right.
And I remember doing a walk around my block on the Wednesday evening before the Thursday. and ringing my mum and saying, I think I'm making it up in my head, but I've cramps in my shoulders. She's like, but do you? And I go, no, I probably don't. But I actually think I do because I've Googled it. And she was like, well, do you? And I was, I don't know. I was like, I don't know, but I think I do.
You can't see the wood from the trees.
I couldn't. I don't know what was wrong with me, but I had really bad cramps. So if you have cramps at the top of your shoulders and you think you're in early pregnancy, it's not a good sign. Like most cases, it's not. So and that's an ectopic sign, this cramping, and then obviously the bleeding. So I was to be rushed into emergency surgery. I was to have that fallopian tube out. And all I kept saying to him was, will I ever have another baby? Will I ever be able to? And he said, well, you've got your right tube. And I was like, and? And he was like, so it should be okay. You know, so they were very like, they answered my questions, but the fear was there. He also said, which I think is much like the control thing, and you're talking about that year off work, you won't be able to try for a number of months. You will not be able to get pregnant the minute you come out of here. It's too dangerous. You've got methotrexate in your system, but also your body has to heal. It's too dangerous. So Jason was there. My mom was minding Gia. My dad was made aware. And yeah, I actually didn't care if I came out. I was actually like over everything, Georgie.
It's just too much.
It was just like, I was over it. I was like, no baby wants to live in me. I really catastrophized. I really went to a very black place. I was like, why would they want to be in me? And they don't, you know, they're trying to kill me even. Like I had very dark thoughts. And I remember being wheeled in and Jason saying to my consultant, mind her, please. Mind her. And he was at the door. And I was like, jeez, Jason, you know, like, embarrassing. And it's not Grey's Anatomy. Trying to crack a joke. And he was like, seriously, mind her. And he looked really worried. And Jason's never worried. I'm the worrier. He's never worried. And I went in. And it's the most fatalistic I've ever felt in my life. I honestly felt like I was probably not going to be coming out of this. I don't know why, Georgie, but I felt very clearly like I was going to die.
You do. I think, what, maybe you just given up. You couldn't take any more.
I don't know. I just felt like that's it. It's just not coming out. So had the surgery, woke up from the surgery and was in horrific form, a lot of pain and very upset. And I could hear a woman who'd come out of a C-section or something with her baby and the baby was crying. And I remember just feeling really disturbed. And I didn't know where the baby was crying coming from. And I was like in recovery. And you know, you're a bit mad when you're in under that much. Like I'd obviously been under a lot of, on a lot of drugs. And I didn't know if it was mine had been taken away. I mean, I was literally obviously going through some kind of psychotic episode. But I kept saying, where's that baby? And they were like, oh, we need to take the baby out of the recovery. And they were kind of whispering. I was like, where is the baby? Like, honestly, how embarrassing. And just acting really strangely. And then they put me on ketamine. My mom was kind of afterwards, I do remember we had a family joke. She's like, who gets put on ketamine after they come out of surgery? Like, you are, your anxiety. I was like, I had probably a mad moment. Again, I didn't want to see Jason. They were like, will we bring him down? I was like, no. I was really low. That was fine. Went up to recovery, was on a morphine drip. I just had nothing left to give. I was really low. And that's when I made that decision to put a post on Instagram, because it's like, this is reality, lads. Yeah. This is it.
This is your, this what's is happening.
Mm-hmm. This is not me posing with Gia. This is not a holiday. This is not, here's some rubbish outfit I bought, some fast fashion. This is actually what's happening right now. If you're wondering where I was for 24 hours in my stupid land of Instagram, here I am. And across the way out the window, I could see the maternity ward, you know, where people would be kind of handed babies. And I remember thinking, what a contrast my bed was, where I was sitting with women who'd had hysterectomies or older women with urinary tract. It was a real mix. And I was looking at that and I was like, what is funny, how funny the world is, you know. And I wanted to get out really quickly, so I made a mistake. Again, this is advice I'd give anyone. I didn't stay for the 3 to 4 days I should have. I got out on the second day because I was like, get me out. Mm. So my parents came in and I used that as an excuse because I knew mentally I needed to not be in there, even though I was on morphine and needed to be on it. And there was a chance of infection. So my folks came in and I was like, OK, Mum, I'm ready to go and I'm going to get discharged. And there was all this like, what? Got discharged, don't know how we managed it, because the pain when I got out was so horrific, because obviously I wasn't on proper medication. So I was taking diphene and paracetamol and diphene and paracetamol like on the 2 hour, you know, and the pain was really bad. And I think I hadn't expected that because, again, I'm a control freak and the wounds were gross and I looked gross and I was distended and, you know. Yeah, and those probably the worst 2 weeks of my life. Just lying in my bed and the most incredible people. And I just want to say also, Lauren O'Sullivan, who we know mutually, And by the way, I have loads of wonderful friends who have been incredible to me, and I would love to mention every single person. But she turned up in Holles Street. I don't know how. She was going to a party in town and she'd been texting that day about something. And I said, look, I actually have to go into Holles Street. And she turned up on the chair beside my bed. And I got such a fright when I saw her. And she was there, and it was like the most incredible. I was like, Lauren, and like we've had great chats about loads of things over the years, but it was such a bizarre thing to see her there. Which is like, I'm sorry if this feels weird, I just wanted to come in and see you. And I was like, no, it is not weird at all. It was so kind.
Wow. Oh my God. And that's Lauren Kelly for people who may have listened to Spin.
Yeah.
Lauren O'Sullivan is her married name. My God. So she sat there.
She was there, and Jason's like, I was like, this is Lauren. We have this secret relationship. Like, we literally voice memo all the time. And she's just been
an amazing person. Yeah, she's such a supportive friend.
She is.
Isn't it amazing how some people just show up for you?
And so many people showed up. Like, our recycling bin was full of cake. Like, our recycling bin outside was cake and lasagnas. I've never had so much lasagna. Flowers. Jason was so excited because I'm a really terrible cook. And there was so many meals. There was presents. And I didn't go to the door for any one of them because I literally couldn't. I was so low. So I did a lot of fake texting, just trying to recover in bed. Just, I couldn't see anyone. And I knew things were bad because I feel like I'm a pretty positive person. Like, I'm a realist in life, I think, but I don't like people who go, oh, it's raining in July, that's the summer gone. I'm like, what? Shut up. Like, shut up. Mm. You know, I'm pretty positive. I always see the bright side. If I don't get that job, I'll get this job. If I don't get pregnant, I'll get pregnant again. I mean, like, you see how I work. I try and fix things. I couldn't fix this. I was feeling very, very low. I couldn't hold my daughter. I couldn't put her to bed. She was very upset by that. There was a lot of tantrums because I would usually do all of that stuff. I couldn't really be with her. I wasn't parenting. I was barely speaking to Jason. I hated myself. I hated my body and myself. And Mum came in one day, and usually my mum's like, get your shit together. My mum is that mum. Get up, you know, come on. And she's very loving, but she's also like, don't wallow. And she'd been through a terrible time with cancer, and I felt really like embarrassed that I was even being like this. But I think she hugged me or something, and I just kept saying, I don't want to be here. I really don't want to be here. Like, and I kept saying it, and she was like, Becca, I said, I'm just feeling really low. And she's like, and I think she must have had some private conversation with Jason upstairs, those kind of mumbling conversations, like, and there was this talk of go to counselling, and I was like, I'm not going to counselling. So he booked a flight to Lanzarote against everyone's wishes. Who knew COVID was going to come a week later? So he booked a flight to some luxury resort we could barely afford for 10 days to just get away as a family to
try to heal.
To heal. Mm. My consultant said, you cannot swim. You can't really be in the sun. You can't put cream in your body. You're going to find it hard to walk. But if Jason can handle that at the airport, give yourself 3 hours. With my blessing, go and mind yourself. Like, he was very kind. Went 3 days in, Leo Varadkar gives a speech. We're all doomed. I'm like, please, what? Everyone is work or being very supportive and trying to get me home. Everyone's trying to find a flight. It's like mayhem. I'm in bed going, I hate everything. Jason's like, Bex, like, we'll be okay. Like, Jason's quite chill about COVID because he's from a country where, like, disease and rampant violence, and it's just so, like, he doesn't really get. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God. So we get through huge kindness through work. We get a flight home that week. And of course, I get a massive infection in two of my wounds. So I had, in the end, a salpingectomy. So some people have laparoscopic through the stomach. They get their tube out, they get the ectopic, or they just get the ectopic. I had pelvic wounds and I had wounds here. So I still have all these 6 scars. Quite sexy. And I got a massive infection, probably from sitting on planes, probably doing things I shouldn't have done, lying out in the sun, wearing hot clothes, because we went on a date night one of the nights, you know, wearing tight clothes, which, you know, with wounds mm-hmm. like that. And I remember just feeling like it was really hot and throbbing and awful one night. Like, I felt like it was really, something was wrong. And I text my cousin, who has too many intimate photos of me on her phone now, because she's a pharmacist, so I'm always sending her things. What is this? She's my cousin's partner. And she just wrote back, is it hard, red, sore? Is it weeping? Are you feeling sick? Yes. Rebecca, that's serious. Go and get an antibiotic. I was like, I can't go to a doctor at COVID. You could barely even go to Spar. Like, so I do this really bizarre Skype with this guy, or FaceTime with this guy. I mean, it's so awful.
Is this when you're still in Lanzarote?
No, so we're
now
back.
You're home.
And I have to self-isolate, by the way, for 2 weeks. I'm like, of course.
Oh, my God.
Don't nobody see me, even though I'm in the worst mental. Like, I need support. I need help. I need a hug from my mom, who's cocooning because she's in her 70s out in Wicklow. So, of course, now I can't see anyone for 2 weeks. And I'm already in a hole. And I needed to get back to work. I needed to start working again. Things were busy. And I get this infection and I go on FaceTime with this strange man. And I'm like, here's this. And he's like, oh, that's a serious infection. We're going to courier over antibiotics to you today. They'll arrive and you need to get on them. They're 7 days of a double strength antibiotic. So fabulous. So that happened. So, I mean, I shouldn't have gone on that trip, but I thought that it was actually, you know what, Georgie, those 3 days have still filled up my kind of heart. Those 3 days we had at the beginning of the holiday.
You needed that with your family.
Oh, no. And when COVID hit and we these three hideous months now, I still say, because Jason's like, we should never have done that. We, you know, it was expensive. It was stressful. It was, you got really sick afterwards, but it's still never forget that date with him, having an Aperol spritz, seeing the beach, the sun, seeing her.
A little bit of light. That sometimes can carry you through months. Just that little glimmer of hope that you had those 3 days that, you know, you're with your husband, you're with your healthy child. You just needed that.
Oh, no, 100%. And we'd had, I think, you know, we'd had a bad winter. Like, it was a really wet, nasty. We'd had a dirty, like everyone said, it was a dirty winter. So it was kind of like we'd had no light. And we usually go to South Africa for Christmas. So there wasn't even that. There'd been these miscarriages, this ectopic, this surgery. It was light. And I actually don't regret. Like, people are like, you were so stupid to do that. And people, having been a journalist for years, they're like, you're so conservative. Why didn't you follow the health? And like, I remember on the day we flew out to Lanzarote, no one being at the airport, it being very eerie. There was signage everywhere. Because obviously things were starting to get bad. And even then going, I don't care. Which is terrible. And I'm a responsible mum. Like, I feel like I'm very good at protecting my family. But such was my desperation to escape myself, maybe. Got back straight into the self-isolation thing, all of this. And yeah, like all of us, we went through it. We worked from home with a toddler, full on, full force. I got into a massive feeling of like your body is vile, so start losing weight, get rid of that weight, get toned, exercise. And exercise is actually a great healer for me, but I don't think it's the only answer for people. I think sometimes we go, we'll just get really fit and it's going to solve everything else, and it doesn't really. Like, it's a great medicine, but it's not the only medicine. And I went to see my consultant after the 12 week point, which I was too. And he was very honest. He looked at me and he said, with ectopics, the high chance of having another, because you're high risk. I was like, what? Say what? Like, what? And he was like, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying that is going to, you know, but it's a higher chance when you have one. And I was like, would I lose my other tube? Because then I'd be complete. And he was like, not necessarily if we got it early. So that's why you'd have to really attend from like 4 weeks. Like, you literally need to know the minute you peed on a stick, you know. But you've the goodwill to go off and try if you want to continue. But is your head in the right place? But physically, you could try. Your scar tissue is healing. Your body's healing. You're a strong woman. Rebecca, you've had a pregnancy before. If you want this, you know. Of course, I get pregnant really quickly because I'm mental. I mean, most people would go, let's park that. I never want to see a willy ever again. Like most people, Georgie. But I was like, solve it, let's go, you know. When am I not ovulate? Like, to be fair, in my defense, I did not think I'd get pregnant quickly. I thought this is going to be like Jason and I spoke about how, like Jacqueline said, it is going to be a long road. Like, it could be a year to 18 months. That's usually the, so I was like, I'm not getting any younger, he's really old. So we tried in that first cycle and I immediately knew the signs that I was pregnant. Like, I know instinctively when it's not a period and it's a pregnant. I knew. And I was very excited. And I felt like this was this rainbow baby people talk about on Instagram, like hashtag rainbow baby or, you know, it's, and it was hugely exciting. And we decided to keep stum and not tell anyone. I felt like this wasn't something to text my family about, or it wasn't. I said, like, this is a private kind of, but the irony is I was to go for my 7 week, we were to go for a scan kind of early if you've had an ectopic. I was to go for my 7 week scan or something. So I think it was that weekend I was at home and I thought, I have to tell my dad and mom. There was something in me that I was like, I want to tell them, because I was being weird. I was quiet. I was very nervous, Georgie. Like,
yeah,
really
you needed
nervous.
Their support.
And I told them. And the next day I miscarried again. The next day I had severe cramps, bleeding into my, like, the sign of blood when I go to the loo now is just like, I'm just like to Jason, I dread it all the time now. It's like, I would have been someone who's like, periods are such great things. Do you know that kind of way? I think it's such a positive thing that your body's working correctly.
Yes, yes.
And I think you've spoken about this before. It's just such a, actually women should embrace that because so many people don't have them or look for them. Or, and I actually now I'm just like, and I said to Jason, I knew that was going to happen. And he was like, you're so doom and gloom. I said, I'm not. I just knew. It's such a bad feeling. Now, it doesn't mean I'm doomed for life, but there was obviously something not healed or it wasn't ready or I'm just not. Who knows?
And here you are now.
I know. So that was June. So it's now July. So that was last month that happened. And my family were incredible. And again, I shared it on Instagram. I didn't do anything too dramatic. I put up a picture where I was like, look, this has happened again. Multiple miscarriages are actually common. They're normal. You don't hear about them because, like I've said, you could be living in Offaly with your partner, living alone in an apartment without a partner. You could be suffering in silence and nobody talks about it. But women are suffering and it is very sad. Even if it's 4 weeks, even if it's 12, which is heartbreaking because you feel like you've ticked that box, even if it's 20 or it's stillborn, like all of these pregnancy losses are heartbreaking for women. And people always say, remember the men. And yes, of course, this is their baby they've made. But I think until physically something arrives into the world, it's a different picture for a man. I don't think it means that we need to mollycoddle people or wrap them in cotton wool. But I think we need to be more understanding and empathetic about it. And I think sometimes there can be a bit of a like, she was a few weeks pregnant. Like,
yeah,
it's really hard for women. And I've now since discovered the power of social media, this great outpouring of support, but also women who are like, oh, this happened to me, or oh, these happened like six times before I finally got my wonderful son, or oh, and such is this yearning like for this family. And actually a wonderful friend of mine, Claire, said once, she goes, are you desperate to have a baby, or are you trying to fix something else, or is this something? And I said, I don't really know, but I said, I do want to complete the family. And she goes, your family is complete. Rebecca, did you say that out loud? And I was like, sorry, I know, Gia is enough, I love her. And I got really like, and she said, Rebecca, having three kids doesn't make you better than having, you have a family. And I remember going, what? She's right. Like, what is this? You know, this box ticking.
Because I was going to ask you there, what helps? What? Because I think people sometimes are so afraid to say the wrong thing that they don't say anything at all. Like, what helps you when you meet people who they've know what you've been through over the last year?
I've completely changed. Like, I can never compare my journey or my story to you. I never will. Will I ever do that as a woman? It would be completely insincere of me. You have been to hell and back. I've been to hell and back in a very different way, perhaps in more of a kind of short-term minor way. But all I know is my life has changed. I have changed completely. The rubbish I worried about before, Georgie. Honest to God, the rubbish, like I can't even, and I think of people now who moan incessantly about really small things or things they, you know, this, someone annoying them or like their partner being a pain in the bum or like work is big. And I'm like, sort it out or move on, stop talk. And I know that sounds really like I'm not patient, and I feel like I do try, I try and be patient, but if it's not a big enough deal, please stop. So I've changed in that sense. I feel like I'm very understanding about people's hurt and pain, and I feel like I'm quieter in myself and probably a little bit sadder. And I probably never changed, which is a pity. I feel a little bit like there's been a bit of a ash put on me.
Yeah.
And that's
it's a scar. You're scarred. Same way I am. And like, you know, obviously time is a healer and I do feel so much happier now. But there, of course, there'll always be a bit of sadness that you were the one that this happened to, you know, and it's taken your innocence away.
And do you feel like there's reason sometimes that something happened? Like, I remember when my mum got sick, I was like, my mum is the shirt off the back kind of woman. Like, my mum has only ever done good for all of us. Why would she get like, and I remember being like that, and I don't know whether you did that, but you do that. But then you kind of go, is there reason? Like, it actually in the end, mum's issue kind of resolved a health issue. Like, it was actually maybe a positive thing and a health. Obviously, it was bad at the time.
Yeah.
But she has said recently to me, actually, that cleaned up this issue. And it made me appreciate my mum more when she, I was like, God, maybe I need to, because I remember going and being in the middle of a news talk shift to bring her to the Beacon and finding out that day and be like, Mom, I've got to read the news at 3 p.m. How long is this going to be? I mean, the rubbish, like, again, not important. Well, it was important at the time because I was the voice of the nation, but like, not important. You know what I mean? But it's made me just not care so much about the rubbish. But it's completely changed, yeah, who I am. But I do think it happened for a reason. I think there was a smugness about my pregnancy with Gia.
Or just maybe a naivety.
was just a bit like, yeah, it happened really quickly. I remember, and what an asshole. And thinking now, speaking to women who'd had miscarriages or molar pregnancies, or imagine saying that, like, yeah, it just happened. Like, we just... And great pregnancy. Like, I wrote a column about it for the Irish Daily Mail. Now, I was very sick the whole way, like, puking, but that's a good sign. It was a healthy pregnancy. I had my labour I wanted. I hypnobirthed. I did whatever yoga at home. I puked on my bed. Jason brought me in at the last minute. I was 7 centimetres. I mean, I controlled every part of that. And so the smugness, that it's not that easy for people to actually have these pregnancies. We all think people are popping out, baby. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that easy. So I have a lot more empathy. I feel like I was always quite kind. Like, I feel like I do try and lead with that. But I've definitely become a lot more like, nobody knows what's, you know, this kind of like, no one knows each person's pain each day. Nobody knows. Mm. I think it's the Tony Houlihan thing recently about his wife. This man was sitting in front of a nation with dark news every single day, and he had that darkness. Mm. And I suppose I'm now listening to more music and reading more and opening my mind back up, where I think I was in a real bubble of work and home and work. And you know what it's like. It's like crash, work, and nothing in between was about me and filling me up. But like, I'm listening to a lot of Christine and the Queens again and Leonard Cohen, and I'm reading and I'm taking a lot of time. Exercise has, and I don't think we should become obsessed. I think sometimes it can be an obsession and a distraction, but exercise has been great for me, because when I feel like I'm getting quite low, I work it out. I probably wouldn't be good at going to a counsellor, and I'm sure everyone would hit me for saying that, and I think it can be incredible for some people, but I have a lot of PTSD where I can hear heartbeats at night, or I can see things, and I kind of try and resolve it myself. I might down the line, but not right now. I think I would just, like I've done here, just cry. I don't think it would be healthy right now.
Yeah.
I'm quite raw.
I think you know when the time is right for you to take that step.
But I think that whole crack in everything, you know, those lyrics, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Mm-hmm. And if we had no darkness, there wouldn't be no light. I continuously go over these things, these references, which sound really... cringy, but they're so true. As life progresses, I feel like I had a very charmed, privileged life growing up. I felt like loved and certain of things. I have a great man in my life, and family are huge for me, and thankfully my career has worked out. It was very difficult for a long time, but it has worked out. I'm being shown more challenging times recently, and maybe there's a reason.
Well, you have been so incredible on this podcast today, and I have just no doubt in my mind that people are going to be really reassured maybe by hearing your story, and just that they're not alone. And I'm so conscious that this is so raw still for you. So I appreciate you telling your story and being so vulnerable. And it's I've told my story on radio before, and afterwards you feel like you've jumped off the side of a cliff. Like, it's a very difficult thing to do, but I have so much love for you. Aww. And thank you so much for being here today, and I just know that you're going
to
be okay.
I know, and I have so much love for you. And just to say, your podcast is truly brilliant and a wonder, and I think we all need it, like, in our lives. So thanks for bringing us that podcast, because I dip in and out of it, and I listen on a Sunday or I come back to it. And you and Jamie are definitely a force to be reckoned with, Georgie. So if Jason and I can be as strong, we'll be good.
I'm just so glad you're a part of it. Thank you so much, Becca.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more of my story, follow me on Instagram at georgie.com.